Okay, so I noticed many of you in the restaurant, so I hope you are revived with new energies, because we will continue about the gap analysis that you will also try to make for your assignment, and then we will look into the psychology of how people actually form perceptions about an organization. And that, I think, is also needed to understand the collective elements, because it's not just an image in society, a reputation of an organization in society. It's the result of a lot of individual processes, how people process information, for example. But it's also the result of collective processes, how people communicate about it on the web, for example, or between peers. So that also is part of how this organization will be discussed by people. So let's take a look at the gap analysis still, because there could be this gap between identity, between the image and the identity, but there could also be a gap between the identity and the desired identity, where you want to go for the organization. So here you see that listed, and of course, very difficult for you to look into. You can only make assumptions about it for your topic. But for me as a consultant, very important to also look into those other gaps. The internal images of the work floor and the top management might be very different. And there's a little bit more about this in the book on the corporate image that was printed and is a handout here. So it tells that sometimes top managers have a very different picture of the organization than people on the work floor have. You can understand that. Sometimes the management is more skeptical, or they have ideas about employees and about the perceptions of employees that may not fit at all. That can be a big hindrance in change processes. For example, we were just in the break discussing a very difficult reorganization, and there I think it also mattered how top management thinks that maybe employees cannot handle participation or that it will give more trouble, whereas actually very often what gives a lot of trouble is that people don't get information and they don't get information soon enough. So there could be misperceptions among the management, not only about the internal image, the image that employees have of the situation. There could also be perceived images so that the people in the board think that the external stakeholders have a very positive image, whereas they might not have that. So, and that is why it's very important to report in the board about the perceptions of stakeholders. Okay, so the image and the perceived image, how it is assumed to be, and especially how top management thinks that the image is, there could be a gap, but you can't measure that, of course. But it's important to keep in mind, because later in practice, or if you already work in practice, as some of you do, that definitely is important. And then, of course, the stakeholder groups can have different views also. And that is why in the assignment, you will be asked to think about a difference in image. So can, for your organization, the one that you're choosing, what would be interesting to compare? Because the diversity gives you more insight than the average picture. So can you already think, is it interesting to compare, let's say, customers versus non-customers? Would it be interesting for an international organization to take a look at some exchange students from one particular country and exchange students from another? But mind you, the idea is that it is a talk that you have, so it's an oral interview. Of course, an oral interview, it's possible to do it by Skype. So that still gives you a lot of opportunities, but I want you to be able to ask why after you ask people a question. So it's the qualitative idea that we want to have. So it should really change your personal views. So that is the idea why some interaction for a measurement is important too. So we go to a question. So we talked about different gaps. And now this example, Nike, but similarly other sport brands after that, had an image problem related to child labor. I think this image problem still exists for many cloth brands, not only for sports clothing. And now is my question, what kind of gaps shown before, or which gap in particular, was most important? Just to ensure that you will not fall into this trap in your assignment, which is a pity. So you really have to think what it's called a gap analysis. So please talk with your neighbor again and do some buzzing.
Previous light, so if they can see it.
Jenny, better bring the mic.
This is related, but what do you think about this Schultz? Sorry about the pronunciation. Schultz and Hatch toolkit about if you want to assess the alignment between vision, culture, and image. Is it okay to use? Because here, this is from another lecture. Another course, and they used words like, or terms like vision culture gap, and then image culture gap, image vision gap.
Yes, so, you can
but
use
is
that
it just
too.
Okay to use like a vision because they don't, well, there isn't any vision, but is it okay?
Yeah, that might actually be helpful if you could use that. Of course, you would need to explain some people that did not do that course. And she's referring to Marieke Schultz. It's a well-known author also for corporate responsibility. Yes.
Yeah, I was just thinking because for me it was easier because I didn't hear image and identity like all over again and again. But here they had vision.
Okay, cool. Might be desired identity. You can continue. Or did you solve it already? And
Okay, I think we could continue. I was listening to this group. You had some interesting debate going on here. Could you please share with the others as well your thoughts on the topic?
Yeah, okay. For us, the gaps now aren't quite clear because we thought a desired identity is what they really want. So they want to be really good and don't do any child labor. But then we thought, is the identity really what the company is doing? Or how do we see the difference between the identity and the image? Because we thought then, what did we say? Because the identity can be either that they do child labor, and then the image, people first think they don't. They don't, so then when they really do, then the identity and image, they come closer, so the gap comes closer, or does the gap gets bigger?
Okay, so to enable a clear gap analysis, all these have to be defined very clearly. And the image is defined as the perceptions of the different stakeholder groups. That's the image. The identity has been defined as the true characteristics of the organization. And as an observer, an external observer, could find out about that. And I skipped a slide for time purposes a moment ago that also gave examples because researchers can also investigate the identity by looking at the culture of the organization and also by looking at the values that are very important inside that culture. And there are techniques for that, like asking people what they do, but then mainly asking them, why do you do it the way you do it? And that gives a kind of laddering result that each time you ask deeper, and then you can find out what the values are that really mean something inside that organization. So, and there's also a lot of big companies that have regular surveys. Okay, well, you can tell maybe. Yeah, let's wait a little while until, because if you know a little bit more about these surveys, it would be nice to hear. And if you want to connect with Nike, it would be even better. It can't be? Why can't it be so? Well, if that is the identity, it is the identity.
And okay. Also sometimes, you know, the companies, they try and concentrate on the other part of things, which is they give better technology and better, you know, products compared to any other company on the market. And they choose to see that as their glass half full rather than, you know, the labor thing being. I mean, they try and take steps to prevent that to come out. But they also try to focus more on that. It's like trying to show the light on the better things of Nike.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the identity could be that it's the real features of the organization, the real situation. So if they have to focus or they feel they want to focus or have to focus on cheap labor, then that is an identity feature. And it may not be the desired identity, but maybe it is not an undesired identity. So it's part of the identity. So the question would then be, at the moment that this was happening, was that an obvious choice of the organization to go for cheap labor with all the consequences it has? Or did it awaken them to that situation? And did they, after that, try to clean up some of the behavior of the company? And then they made it into a desired identity. But it may not have been so clear, a vision of the organization, if I can use Marieke Schultz and her ways of pushing it. So if it wasn't into the vision before that, it could have become, after this crisis, it could have become part of their vision to gradually work on it and maybe not being able to immediately solve it, but to at least solve it to some extent. They're still struggling with it because they also want to use cheap labor, but cheap labor doesn't always mean all these bad examples. Does this clarify your question anyhow? Yeah, and I think that answer that you got there was also quite helpful. Jenny, do we get more or
any other thoughts on this topic? Any other groups?
A question coming also here, but first we go there. There was the question. Oh. No, you go first.
Okay. I thought it's very interesting to think that a company doesn't need to. I mean, people are ready to accept some not so ethical things, even if they can get something cheaper, or that, for example, Nike shoes. Everyone wants those, and they kind of want to close their eyes and not think of so much, even if their own values are like that. Mm-hmm. You don't want to use child labor, or so. Then you just are ready to accept things, and that's also. Yeah.
Yeah, so as you haven't got the phone, I'm going to rephrase you a little bit anyhow. There are different features, and if that company says another feature is more important for me, but also if the consumer goes for some features, if some of the Volkswagen brand consumers, if they really likes, if they think it's technically more advanced, I don't know actually, but I do like some of the gear, etc., then maybe another feature is not so positive. So I think it's very good that you take a nuanced approach here, because what consumers actually do is kind of balancing. So it might be that I, for example, like environmentally friendly matters, but I make my own mix of things, and I am the one who adds up if the sum at the end of my behaviors is what I want to do. So maybe in some instances I'm not so very environmentally friendly, whereas in other behaviors I'm very strict. So that sum up is made by every consumer on his or her own. So that makes it, and again, for the company, in the identity, the combination of features that they go for, it's also a kind of balancing of different features, which is why you should look at an image not just as an opinion of people like it or hate it. No, it has to do, which is why I think the term image is so much more relevant than just some reputation elements that are measured by opinions. So people make they add it up themselves, and the picture is actually quite complex for an individual. But then imagine that you connect it with how we talk about this online. So it's a kind of messy picture that you get, but still it adds up to something, and it might add up to, as one of you said earlier, credibility for the organization, or it might cost you greatly in credibility. So it's a combination of features. So actually it's very good that you came with such things after this question, because in the case of Nike, it clarifies for us that you cannot talk about one gap. You were asked to position this particular gap, and then you end up with asking, isn't this actually a gap between identity and desired identity? Or didn't the company even desire that at that point? Or in how much do they desire it now? Which talks about the vision and the policies of the organization. But actually, you're now thinking, when you are doing some measurement, it's not only about environmentally friendliness, but you will probably also connect with other features. So it could be that for one feature, one characteristic, you're in a change process. And for another feature or characteristic, you have already done the change process and you're ready to do the talk because you already do the walk. Yeah? So it depends from feature to feature, and you're constantly, when you're talking about communications, you're always busy, but at different stages for different features. And if you get only that message out of today, I'm already very happy, and it's just a consequence of us talking together instead of just me talking. So I think that's excellent. So shall we...
Was there a question, or did you
Yes, there
answer?
Was here a question. Don't trip over something. Oh, yeah, pass it on.
Sorry. Oh. You almost answered some of part of my question, but as a student, if we are not part of, I mean, we are not workers or within the company of Nike, and then how can we define the thin line between desired identity and the actual identity? Because if I want to do the gap analysis, image I can easily find from feedback from articles, social media, whatever. All I can find about the company, from the company, it's the website.
Or you can, on the website, find the latest year report, which is, anyhow, a good skill to open that. And that will clarify it a little when you are supposed to make an assumption. So then you can make the assumption a big jump or a smaller jump. That's all you can do. And I don't expect more. If later, in practice, you can be more precise. So here you have to phrase it a little bit more carefully, as if you're a researcher and you, some things you know because you have been talking to at least some of the clients, or some of, well, mainly it's usually general public, but there are also some careful ways to phrase it.
Yeah, but the feedback I get from the others, the outsiders, is the image.
Yes.
Right. But the thin line between the identity and the desired identity, what I get from the website, is it the desired identity? Because in general, the websites, they give information.
But you will quickly, I think, Google it and find some news reports also. So if sometimes it's quite easy, or you have already heard a lot of criticism on the company, and then you know that it may not be policy yet. And in other cases, you really don't know. So you have to write it down carefully. That's possible, yeah? Okay, anyhow, your report will be facilitated because you can already find on the Optima workspace a format that is given to you after student feedback of earlier years. I now made a slide format. Also, because in practice I find out that employers have less and less interest in lengthy reporting. And I combined that with the thought that for some of you it might still be a little bit daunting to write a real, let's say, research report in English at this stage of your studies. For others that will be just easy, I know. But anyhow, if employers want you to make short reports, you can also use this like slide format, because mainly within a company it's also about how you present it. Of course, when I'm at a board meeting invited, there is a written report. It's usually much, much longer than I let you report. But I know that, like you, not all board members have been reading that carefully. So it's very important how my presentation will be. So that's why I let you report using a slide format, and also that makes it easier to focus exactly on the content, and so that you're not all the time worried, what do you expect me to do, and... So that takes away some of the nervousness, and it makes available space for your own thoughts. And then, of course, you are you. You get a template, but you are you, yeah? So are you sometimes naughty? Well, I definitely am all of the time. So when you get a template, you can use the template, but if you have any trouble working with a template, don't trouble yourself too much, but just, there is one of the slides is called a joker. It's like a free slide anyhow, so which means that you can anyhow are invited to make one slide totally different just because it's you that wants to say something that you can't fit in, something like that. But, of course, it's you anyhow. It's a template, yeah? It's mainly designed so that you don't go wrong, but if you just capture it and you're in the right direction, but you have some own ideas, feel free also. Okay, so we talked about this, and we talked about your lack of knowing it all, which just means that you have to be careful in how you phrase some matters. And the next question for you is coming up, and it is quite helpful to use a technique by Tony Buzan, and you can also find it on the web, and there's a link also on the Optima workspace in the first section. But I would like you to quickly use that already, and you may have used it previously, so why not? So if we take the example of McDonald's again, I would like you to just draw this mind map, which is basically free format, but you're connecting. Almost you're doing it as if it is a brain structure in the brains of the receiver. So which kind of associations, which kind of issues do we get connected to this company? So even if you focus on one particular crisis, at the moment I wouldn't know one particular crisis for McDonald's, but I would know some long-standing issues that pop up now and then again if there is something connected to that. For example, if a neighborhood has a lot of waste problems, then that problem again comes up and it could grow or it maybe does not grow online. So could you draw the beginnings of a mind map? Because that could be a very good technique. It's not obligatory to use for your own topic, but you might like to, within your group, all make a little mind map and then sit together and compare them. And then you have gained, and also you know how the other people in your group are actually thinking about it. So actually, I would take now McDonald's again so that we can exchange it. But you can also apply this for your topic. If you're already sure what you take, you could switch to that topic. That is also a way of being naughty in a nice way. Okay, so go ahead and buzz about this.
Thank you.
Okay. Was there a question or do you want to start? I would like to have a volunteer down here. It's an easy task if you have a nice handwriting, so you don't need to talk. You can just come here and write it on the board. My handwriting is so bad that I don't do it. Oh, you want to be the volunteer? Now, someone pray, please. Come down here so we can see what we get. Who wants to do it? Come on. Maybe from here, from the front, please. Just in the middle, McDonald's, and then what others say, you just write there. Thank you. Okay. And while we get her to assist us, we could start. I thought I saw a nice mind map here. Maybe your group could start with what issues you think are involved with McDonald's.
Okay, so we were talking about the health problem because like they have a fatty food and a lot of salted and they don't really know the materials in it. I mean like probably they don't really actually know what is that inside, and then the nutrition problem because like it's a fast food. And also we're talking about the employee wages. For example, in the States, the labor cost is very low. And then also I think that's all we're talking about.
So labor, health and nutrition, maybe they go close by. Okay.
Over mechanization of things. So like after a certain level, because they don't use any creativity of their own, the employees, the skill is lost in the process. Do you get what I'm trying to say? It's like
it's basically a negative image in the employment market because basically employees feel that they cannot gain a lot of skills if they join McDonald's. So it's a negative image from the perspective of recruitment and in the employment market, basically.
Any other issues? I think I saw somewhere in the middle there was paper full of ideas. Just don't be afraid. All the ideas are good ideas. Here?
Well, we think it's cheap and accessible. So it's therefore it's a very popular. Cheap. The food is cheap.
I thought about a problem, a type of an issue that they haven't, really started to do deliveries as other companies might do that, and they are losing customers from that, probably.
That could be a key word. Lack of delivery,
distribution. So no, they don't deliver. So their distribution is different than some other companies are doing it.
No home distribution? No home delivery? Yeah.
I could comment on that. In some countries, they do deliver.
Mm. They started, just started. Yeah, true.
So they have local business models.
In many places, they have no home delivery, but in some they do. Yeah.
Any other issues? Any other issues? Can you think of any? Oh, here. Sorry.
I would like to point out the recycling and the waste management issue that do they, because the bio waste, the customers don't separate the bio waste from the other waste, and also how the different customer groups then may cause different kinds of waste issues. For example, we talked about this one McDonald's in the close area of Jyväskylä, where teenagers they have the chance to put the garbage inside the garbage bins, but they don't. So how the McDonald's there is addressing this issue, and because this customer group acts differently than the others.
Any other issues here?
McDonald's also has a monopoly among junk food producers, and also it kind of dominates regional markets. So that's also could be an issue.
Okay, not so flattering issues. Can you think of any a bit positive issues? Are there any?
Now, anytime you want, you have it there. It's ready for you. And any place you go, you have like a standard belief that at least you get a meal which is not contaminated and free Wi-Fi. I actually use that.
It's something similar to what you said, that like no matter where in the world you are, McDonald's food is the same. It's kind
give of it
like
a mic.
Haven.
Give it a mic.
Traveling abroad, you know what you're getting, like both in here.
Also the fact that they've tried to create a more environmental friendly image, and they've changed their napkins to recyclable napkins. So that's something positive that they did.
Recycling
stuff. Yeah. Recycling, environmental friendly issues.
Shall I try to make some conclusions based on all of this input? Yeah, maybe.
Thank you.
I should even ask you some things, because I see a lot of things here that might be similar for some other companies too. Can you comment on that? Is it specific for McDonald's, or now nobody wants to write anymore? But
yeah, I think that like there are these common sustainability issues or corporate reputation issues, CSR issues like labor rights, or including all kind of things, environmental issues, waste mainly. This is also maybe a labor issue in a way, but also about the products or like their health impacts.
And accessibility, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
So you could see that it's kind of odd collection of features that somehow also fit others. I don't know if that I will go back to you in a moment. But the labor issues are quite similar for the whole sector of fast food. The labor issues you can also find in supermarket stores, where actually it could also be quite understandable that you have a different part of the labor market amongst many of your employees, not of course amongst all. So you can still work with that in a way. But there were actually a lot of labor issues, crises in the past. So apparently it was not so obvious that this is a kind of work that is more suitable for a kind of people on the labor market, for example, very young people. So the waste problem is similar to any fast food company, I would say. And it is a big problem, because I also know that when I walk from my new city where I live near a kind of green lung of a city, And I walk out there, and then when I cross the parking place, I note, oh yeah, this is the parking place where many people go to with stuff that they bought at the McDonald's. So it's always a lot of trash there. So, and it's probably not addressed by them because it's not the direct neighborhood, because people drive from there to that place. But in the neighborhood, there sometimes are all kinds of projects where people and volunteers are trying to clean up such matters and gain a lot of goodwill still. But the waste problem is, of course, a bigger one. But you addressed this recycling already so well. The nutrition and health part, that also relates to the choices that consumers make. Because maybe the consumer that wants to have their products could not be so worried about these particular features because they are more interested in other features. So there, what I miss a little bit here is the more drastic criticism that they have gotten, like that it's damaging the rainforest. That is has been part of a legal suit in the United States. And why is that? Because they are so big that they use a lot of ingredients, that there is some kind of connection put by some people with cutting down rainforest in order to get food for the animals that then provide the food for you in the McDonald's. So there are some also a little bit almost odd or far-fetched criticisms there that were part of a legal suit. Yeah, some of these things are part of the choices that the management made because they want to do. For example, the fact that if you want to eat a hamburger, it should be almost ready when you're there. And in order to deliver very fast, the other side of the same coin is that they have to throw out meat that would be perfectly good for food at the moment that you do not enter because they have it ready for you and it goes so quickly. So such matters are simply the other side of the medal of a feature that they chose. So there, of course, you could also have, and they have a lot of communication actually about such issues on the website. So that would be a very good idea to check at least that for your own organization. You had a... Okay. So we can conclude that McDonald's is like a magnet for all kinds of criticism that could also apply maybe for other organizations. Sometimes it relates to their policy choices. Sometimes it relates to the type of product they deliver. And now I'm almost back at that slide before our break where I said potential image problems. And I can tell you that looking over the years at the answers that I gained from students, that all of the types of potential issues actually apply for this organization as a possibility. So they actually have been thinking a lot about it, and if there's one person or one organization doing research, it is McDonald's. They're known for very well doing their systematics in research and actually in adjusting to local tastes. So they go through the motions, but of course it's their decisions that still can conflict with expectations of stakeholder groups. And of course there are different stakeholder groups that they try to... Well, there's one type of criticism that I think that might be current. They're quite slow to react to new opportunities, like this delivery problem where a lot of competition is home delivery, and they just started doing that in some places. So they're not known for being very fast. And later there will be, in the third seminar, when we talk about strategies and strategic problems, one of the strategic problems also relates to if you are fast to react on changes in the market or that you are like a lazy cat, have a lazy cat mentality. That's what they call it. A lazy cat that's rolled up before a warm place, but not really moving. That can change over the times, because IBM used to have that identity, But it changed, and it's now much faster in how it reacts. It can't say that anymore, but has been. Okay. So we roll this one back. Don't know. It might still be useful later. But let's take a look at the next slide. So how do people form an image? And there's much more to say about this topic than only this. So what you see, actually, is an organization here, the identity of the organization, like, for example, McDonald's, and the industry image of the sector, fast food. So it's quite clear that the market leader, almost, for in that case, it's almost the same. The branch image reflects very much, affects very much to the organizational image, I should actually say. Well, anyhow, the branch is communicating sometimes. So if you're talking about a market leader, it usually doesn't go into collective advertising, things like that, together doing things, because on its own it's already so strong and it wants to keep the competition behind. But the smaller partners often do, or if there is a less competitive relation. For example, I have been active in university campaigns that were collective. So that is a possibility, or in healthcare campaigns that were collective. An individual image forms that image based on what is somehow seen directly from how the organization behaves and its communications. And that's only one arrow. So that's the message of this picture. There's only one direct arrow. And then this individual is also influenced a lot by all these collective pictures. So I once had to do a speech for a group of builders. And I don't know what you know, but builders have a very negative reputation. It's considered the most corrupt industry in Western Europe, Western and Europe, Northern Europe. But these builders told me, it was actually on a big moving boat, on a kind of ferry talk that I had to do there. And so they said that it was very difficult to say, but we are, in contrast to the rest of the sector, we are the good guys. So it's very difficult to communicate that, actually, which is making it more likely that they will collaborate in a joint collective effort to clean and maybe to get codes across in the sector. So that could be more like an opportunity there. Then there are all kinds of intermediaries that influence this one image. So let's suppose this is you before you chose for this university. So you will have been influenced by the website and direct stories of this organization. So you will have checked there. So that's the direct thing. And then if you're an exchange student, you will also have had some ideas about Finnish universities, maybe, that also added to your image, because you may not have known so much about Jyväskylä anyhow. And then there were some stories that were told to you by where you come from, people that informed you about your options, and they will also have influenced you. Maybe not so much, actually. And then there are some ideas of parents. Well, they may not have influenced at all nowadays. But then there could be some other peers that have been here and that told, oh, yeah, you have to go there, and especially as exchange students go there because they have the most marvelous programs and you can go to Lapland and... Oh, it's... yeah, we can talk long about if it's really free, but yeah. And then there are some environmental factors that also influence how you're thinking about education and how important it is if it is free in that sense. So that's like a contextual factor. So when I look at this individual, and it could be you, maybe you were actually surprised when you came here that some things were much better or not so good as you expected. Also, when you came from within Finland, you often don't have a full picture before you actually enter the business school or where you study currently. But this organization only has one arrow, has only one of all those many. So when you're working for an organization, this helps to tell them that it's not so easy to manage an image, because there are so much other things that influence there. And it also helps you in your storyline when you have to go to the board, like I do, and tell them you only have one shot at getting it right. So we should really talk together how you talk with the press, and that it can't be that one person is talking this story and another is talking that story. Then nobody knows it anymore, and it really looks quite foolish. You have only got one shot at it. So that's the idea from this picture. It's explained more in the book. But what is then the psychology of image formation? And if we look at that psychology, what is then the most important conclusion to give? Well, there are some theories about that. And you need to understand it, because otherwise you will not understand why the image can be totally different from the identity. So you have to understand how these processes go. So it's definitely not a rational process. Reactions of publics are very difficult to predict, and still, we are asked by board members and by managers to say, well, if we will do it like this, what will be the reactions? And of course, that's like looking, well, if you gain more knowledge about what matters, also from a psychological perspective, it will be easier to predict or to understand, at least at the same moment that it's happening, why that is happening, or why one topic, one issue is growing, is going viral, and why another issue is not going viral at all. Why, for example, for Volkswagen, did mean that the shares were dropping, but they were not dropping as much as they could have been. And anyhow, the last page on this adventure has not yet, this story has not yet totally developed. So, but do understand that it makes a big difference, because crime levels in society may be decreasing, while actually feeling of unsafety could go up at the same time, and the police might not understand it. Luckily, in Finland, the police is one of the best authorities in monitoring social media and trying to capture ideas in society, which is why also their reputation is very good, also internationally even known. I collaborated also a lot with them. So terrorism also means that some people will exaggerate those risks, and maybe other people are underestimating risks from behavior that they anyhow use. Sometimes a very small pebble will cause a major flood. Sometimes, you know that story about the butterfly movement on the other side of the world is causing a major avalanche in public opinions at the other side of the world. So here you see a picture that I was not allowed to use in my books, because the publisher said they will never get capture that. Well, you will. So here you see three different nerve cells. And the three different nerve cells are interrelated. So if I then tell you, of course it doesn't really look like that, because it's all packed in a kind of protective stuff which is called the glia, and which doesn't make it that visible. But it is connections between nerve cells. And of course, there is oxygen coming from your blood veins, and that feeds in this process. And you will have heard that it's actually a chemical transport between the cells that actually causes these associations. But it really helps if you can kind of visualize that for yourself, to see that it's really almost like the lights in a Christmas tree, that once you hit certain connections, it might very quickly go that way. So if I will then later talk about framing, so if I put a lot of emphasis on some associations, I will get the whole string of associations the whole network to go with that, that is kind of activated. So if I then tell you that research has shown that connections that you made previously form like a very solid bridge. So next time, you will connect easier through that same connection. That means that it is easier to assess information that is well connected, it can connect to your current brain connections. So if I can manage to help you connect what is happening in this class to things that you're thinking about, many more Christmas lights will go on and off, and I can't see that in your brains, than when I talk like some kind of strange story that what's she talking about. So I need to reinforce the structures that are already there. But of course, you're immediately now thinking, I hope you do, before I say it, that that explains stereotypes. So if some connections that you made before are much easier, a road that has been trodden before is more often chosen again. So the connection, the chemicals, it's all in a way prepared for the next. And that's why it's so difficult if you have to do communications for a company and that company has to do with all these stereotypes connected to it. And then, so it takes years to actually build it up and to take out connections. So to unlearn is way more difficult than to learn. And actually real learning can usually only be done by unlearning. So the neural networks work, yeah, like chains of associations. So now you understand that there is a theory that's called the memory spread theory that says that nerve cells form networks called schemata. Schemata is the Greek plural for schema, so you can also say schemas as a normal English plural. And these can be activated by an automatic reminding process or a conscious search. So when I start to talk about the Finnish beautiful forests that always make me emotional when I fly in again, and when I got here first time for my job, when we drove from Turku to Jyväskylä, I was almost crying because I thought this was so beautiful. But now I have started in your brain a subconscious process, and you will also start to think forests. Yeah, so that's a sub. You didn't choose that, but just because of my story, you were thinking about these forests and what would it be that would make it so beautiful for her and maybe for you or not. Yeah, but I could also ask you to describe the forest near your house, and then you would have to start a conscious search. You would have to start thinking where you grew up. And how it, where you grew up, and how you then went into the forest. So that is like making these actions a conscious search. But of course, a subconscious search happens all of the time, the whole day through, whatever you think, you're doing all of that. So we're all living like parallel virtual lives, because it's not just what's happening to us, but it's what's doing it to our brains that is kind of causing almost a lot of second lives. And sometimes it can be really difficult to make a difference between what's this virtual life about and what is this reality around us. And if we do a lot of escapism, which is very famous, for example, it's still a hype in a lot of Asian countries, then it becomes less and less easy to disconnect from that. Mental imagery is another theory stream that is about internal sensory experiences. So it's about daydreaming and about problem solving. So images also include smell. And actually, it's very easy to, if I could put something like some forest smell, and I put it in a little pot, and it's actually a treatment for dementia for elderly. And I ask them people, and then they suddenly get all these associations because smell is very strong in bringing up memories, which is why perfumes are sold unreasonably well. So an image actually is not just what you see or what you're cognitively connecting, but an image even has its parallels for other sensory experiences. And sometimes smell can bring up a lot of memories and is actually quite helpful there. And daydreaming is so typical for human beings. It's human beings that can do that, and that is that second life experience that in your mind, if I start to be boring, you will start to think about other matters, and it's subconsciously beginning, so I have to really take every chance that I can to keep you with me. But daydreaming is typical. Just imagine that you're in your bed, you can't sleep, and you're foolish enough to try to reorganize your room. I'm sure you will not sleep. You will keep wide awake. It will not help. You have to think about other matters in order to sleep. Some things you don't remember. Other things are exaggerated. For a journalist, during wartime, the abnormal starts to become normal. It starts to become really normal. What is a halo effect? A halo is when you know maybe one person or one aspect of an organization, and you're transferring that, and it becomes your image of that organization as a whole. We often see the opposite, that people have one very negative experience with an organization, and that makes them into hate holders. And that is called the opposite of the halo effect, the horn effect of the devil. So then there is another kind of mechanism that is working immediately. Hey, I don't. Oh, there it is. There, yeah, here. Simple interference. That means that we think, or we're not conscious of that, but we think that some things go together. So we connect, for example, fat with maybe friendly, which is definitely not the same. And we also connect big organizations with being much at a distance. So simple interference means that a large organization already might have a disadvantage just because it's large, because we connect those things. And patterns are very human ways to handle a lot of different information. And I would like to add an example of... Well, there is no better. It is some time ago, but maybe you saw a movie about it. Agatha Christie. Agatha Christie, who writes about Miss Marple, her detective. She also writes about Poirot. But let's talk about Miss Marple. It's an elderly lady. And that elderly lady solves a lot of crimes. And when she's on holiday somewhere else in, of course, England, can't be anywhere else with these pictures, these cottages. And she always recognizes patterns of, for example, a young guy of 19 who just reminds her of a guy in her home village. And that gives her clues about the potential killer in this case. But one thing is very clever of Miss Marple. She never makes that a law. So she keeps an open mind about this. Even though she recognizes the patterns, she keeps an open mind, and sometimes it is really different. But unfortunately, we are not Miss Marples. Unfortunately, when we see a pattern, it's almost impossible to still see the deviance, what is conflicting with that pattern in our head. So only if we very actively train ourselves to still see what is not what we expect to see, only then, and that relates also to our last class, we will see when a process goes wrong inside an organization, and there could be a deviance, maybe in the factory something goes really wrong, and there could be a big explosion, but when they expect to see patterns, humans see patterns. So in that sense, we have a big disadvantage, but it can also be an advantage in other cases. So perception is biased by incomplete knowledge, and I am always baffled to see results of research. For example, an investigation into what American people know of tomatoes. And then they asked, and the result is that a lot of the interviewees say that a tomato, they agree with the statement that a tomato does not have genes. A tomato does not have genes. They say, no, a tomato doesn't have genes. So, and then you are trying to communicate with them about GMOs, genetically modified organisms, and you want to have a very detailed pro-con talk about it. And they think, might think, that tomatoes do not have any genes. So do not overestimate basic knowledge. And also, of course, companies have to add a lot of basic knowledge into their communications, because this may be necessary for large groups in the audience. So that's incomplete knowledge. And attribution means that we think that we see a reason, a causal relation, a purpose. That's unfortunately very human also. If this is negative, it can become paranoia. So then we are starting to think that, my sweater looks awful today, and they're all looking at it. Yeah, it's not true, of course, because they're just looking at how marvelous your smile is. But they're, so that's becoming paranoia about it. Connecting cause and effect, it could also be positive, and that's often the case in all kinds of images, in religion. We believe patterns above coincidence. It's very difficult for humans to, for example, accept that something that could happen to me tomorrow is not actually maybe my fault, but it could. I could just be part of a terrorism scam, and I did not invite it. I really am not to blame. It's like children thinking that their parents are leaving each other and that the child is probably has caused it and gets into trauma. Yeah? So we often... So about organizations, we also have all kinds of ideas and all kinds of paranoia about Volkswagen being obviously... Well, I think they really do, but... Who am I? I'm not free of that kind of thinking also. That they knew what they were doing all of the time. And that is that paranoia, or is that really so? And why did Pierre, why did that manager have such a row with the CEO? Was that really because he knew what was coming and he didn't agree to continue this scam? I think so. But I don't know. That's attribution. So as long as you can still be like Miss Marple and tell yourself, but you must understand that your target groups may make all of these obvious or not so obvious matters. The bandwagon effect is another one that tells that people might want to side with a winner. So it's what you see at the end of the war, that suddenly everybody also agrees that the probable winner is much better, and you can connect with that better. It's not always so. Some people choose always for the underdog, which depends on how you were raised and what values are part of your brain. Anyhow, the notion of the receiver should almost be forbidden to think of receivers. I used the word, but I did that obvious a moment ago. The receiver actually is the one who constructs the message. And what you give them is just ingredients. These ingredients can be thrown away or they can be used, depending on a lot of different circumstances. For example, depending on the interests of somebody who would really like to know that these fake truths of Mr. Trump are no problem whatsoever. Because you would really like, if you voted for him, well, there's not many Americans here, you would really like to see that it's okay, and others will probably say it's fake truths. So I'm going to somehow, I think I'd better skip some things here. So this is how the mind deceives us. I already answered that, basically. Do we live in a virtual world? Well, how much? My mother... at some point couldn't leave her room anymore. She was living for the television. That was her virtual world. But she was happy that way.
Could you say that the brand image of, like, you know, Trump becoming a politician and then, you know, telling rude things on the camera made an effect on his brand identity, which many people started boycotting?
We need to actually that. Yeah, but not for this. So the remark was relates to Trump. And to answer you, and also looking at my time, I will use the next slide for your answer. So framing means people need an interpretation scheme, because otherwise you get data like one and zero in your mind. It doesn't work. Yeah, that's data. You can't do anything with it. So framing provides an interpretation scheme as a context to understand and define a situation. And by definition, by Trump or by anybody else, but especially also those people that listen, I would almost say again the receiver, but I just told you that that word isn't so clear. Well, this proves it in a way. Let's talk about a receiver. A receiver also makes his or her own frame of mind. Yeah, it's a reference frame that we all have developed. And the older you get, the more reference frame you get. So it becomes more and more difficult to stay open for many different ideas that don't totally fit with what is already there. So it provides, so people actually frame. It's the receiver who frames already the message. But of course, also senders, or if that same person is going on the web and tells anything, is also framing. And actually, I have been using a lot of framing in this class because I highlighted things that I think are important or that could motivate you, which is framing the topic as being really, really important and being enthusiastic about the topic. So that's framing. So framing is not the bad guy. Framing is a neutral word. Everybody frames a message. Of course, the way in which people frame, it doesn't always mean, it puts the spotlight on some stories, and then the storyline could become really different. And maybe it's very difficult if one person tells me the story from her perspective and another from his perspective, it's already two frames that might clash. So, and then there are people that obviously don't do fair play. And that brings me to your question, because we don't know if the actors around us are all doing fair play or that they would like to use alternative truths. And there I really can only say that this class will also contribute to your literacy, your media literacy, to how you interpret what's going on, for example, in the web, looking at it from a multi-actor perspective, knowing about framing. And I would like everybody to understand the principle of framing, and that, again, would help my views on democracy. So I think, like a literacy, that people have to be able to read and write. They also have to be able to understand the media. They have to be understanding that what framing is. So for next time, the big question for you is to find a team. Jenny, if you have to. Which organization will be your topic? I advise you to draw a little mind map of that. You could also already try this field of forces for that organization, also to try out if the topic is really working. Then I would suggest that you find some background information beyond the website of the organization. So you could use the web, but I would suggest to go beyond this one organization and his or her own website. So I would also advise you to already start reading, because I can try to involve you in my story. But I think if you now read also those two books, you will gain something more, some own ideas based on that. And then to end this course, what did we do today? The course focus and the course work were clarified to you. And I hope that now you know where to begin where to start looking. The core concepts were defined, but next time, on Thursday, I will go a little bit deeper about reputation and image and what are differences in the measurement approach. And we talked a bit about the psychological perspectives, and I know you've heard some more things about stereotyping already, but if you connect what you know already to this, we will know more. I addressed a gap analysis, image formation, and so next time, on Thursday, we'll talk about what do people think about my organization. And so don't forget to fill in the Optima workspace, even if your group is not complete, but you have already two or three people together, just put it there with your intended topic. You can always change the topic later. You can always add people later. And next time, we are in A2, which is, well, yeah, there. And that means that we again have 1 hour before class, that the room is not used for other classes, which means that you could already meet up with the people because you're coming anyhow. So if you're a bit earlier, you might also use that time efficiently by already sparing about your organization, or maybe if you don't know yet the topic. If you haven't yet found people to talk with, you can also try that before the next class. So I hope you enjoyed this lecture, and let's see where we go next time. Thank you for your attention.